This is number 0019, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you with another edition of the Stuff File program. This one is number 0019. And coming up on the Stuff File program, actor Ray McKinnon, who played Coach Cotton in the runaway hit film With a Heart, The Blind Side.
Life is sometimes sentimental and sweet, and occasionally movies can reflect that. And so I think there was a real hunger for that. We're all surprised at how well it's done. Good gracious. Wish I'd have had points.
Also, Rob Knight from GorillaSuits.com. You can find a suit to fit your budget or taste.
Our suits, we have a couple of different ones, depending on if you want more of a fun-looking mask or something that's simple. And we even have one that's our 2-bit Roar Gorilla suit, and it comes with a movable mouth on its mask, which is a very unique feature.
We'll check the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
Plus, we have Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation.
Mom and her kerchief and I and my cap, we just settled down for a long winter's nap. And I'm going to tell you all about it in 30, 40, 50 paragraphs. Hi, this is Steve Walsh. You know, your guy in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. You're going to want to stick around for my 2-minute tirade. It's a Christmas edition of the 2-minute tirade, coming up later on, right here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff. And an idiot of the day. The guest Slater on this edition of the Stuff File program, the person who told you this was program number 0019, is David Soroka, who's a friend of mine and also the plumber to the stars. So if you have items in your house just floating away, you might want to call a plumber. David Soroka has a company called Access Plumbing here in the Montreal area, actually located in Laval. So as I said, if anything's floating away, give David a call. And again, thanks, David, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File. Let's get right to the stuff. And hey, we've got another golf scandal story for you, but this time it doesn't involve Tiger Woods. You know, there are many ways of getting yourself banned from exclusive country clubs. Being poor or a minority are probably the easiest ways, but letting them film a golf-themed porno in your condo also works really well. Raul Quintana owned a number of condos on the exclusive Fisher Island just off Miami Beach, and he made the mistake of renting one of his properties out to a representative from a modeling agency. I'm doing air quotes for that little bit of the story there. They wanted to hold a photo shoot, more air quotes. Sounds exciting, right? Unfortunately, that photo shoot turned out to be the filming of a porn film called A Sexy Golfing Experience, which was featured on the high-class website Ass Parade. Of course, word got around, and poor Raul not only lost his guest privileges for his condo, he was also relegated to an inferior boarding position on the island's ferry and eventually banned from the Fisher Island Club altogether. If you're rich, these are extremely bad times. Raul is fighting back and suing BangBrothers.com. I'm not making that up. They're the company that owns the website Ass Parade. And Raul actually said, and this is a real quote, "They really banged my life." That's his quote, not mine. I'll just move along. We go to Germany. In Darmstadt, Germany, four friends were walking through the woods at night when they suddenly found themselves confronted by a pack of wild boars. Feeling that their lives might be in danger, they managed to take cover in a waste dumpster by jumping into it. Police got an emergency call at around 3 a.m. from a man who said he and his buddies were too terrified to come out and to please come and rescue them. A police team found them shivering and freezing in the metal dumpster and escorted them from the scene. The boars had apparently already disappeared. And we have another story dealing with a boar, kind of, sort of. And it's also a Darwin file story because, as you know, the tree of life is often self-pruning. In Greece, 49-year-old Christos Constantinou made the very bad decision to go hunting wild boar while dressed in animal skins. And you guessed it, Things did not turn out well for Christos, who is no longer with us. No, he wasn't attacked by wild boar. He was shot by other hunters who thought he was a wild boar. Christos was pronounced dead upon arrival at the hospital. Elsewhere in Hornell, New York, the city's common council has approved a ban on smoking in all city parks, but with a weird stipulation. Hornell Mayor Sean Hogan said while the move makes sense and that more and more cities are doing it, local police will not be enforcing the ban, but rather it will be left up to peer enforcement. This should end well. We're sure we'll have more exciting stories from Hornell Parks relatively shortly. Maybe not necessarily during the winter, but certainly when warmer weather rolls around once again. Moving right along, as you know, when you listen to the Stuff File program, we often talk about lawsuits, and there are some pretty bizarre and ridiculous litigious situations, primarily in the United States. So as we wind down this first decade of the new millennium, we look back at all the ridiculous lawsuits we've heard about in an effort to find the one that truly stands out as the outstanding piece of litigious chaos deserving of the Ridiculous Lawsuit of the Year award. Now, obviously, this is subjective and open to debate, but we kind of like Albert Fried's lawsuit for defective underwear against Hanes that was dismissed back in October by a Pensacola, Florida judge. Fried complained that Hanes's briefs had caused him severe pain and ruined his vacation. In his filing, he claimed that the brief's front flap had inexplicably failed to close while he was swimming in the ocean. This allowed his special parts to protrude and rub against his swim trunks that contained sand from the beach, thus irritating his sensitive skin. But here's the best part. Fried said he delayed diagnosing the problem because he cannot easily peer over his belly and could not inspect his own privates. Furthermore, he said he would never consider examining his naked body in a mirror, much less ask his wife to inspect it for him. Consequently, he had endured increasing irritation before finally figuring out the cause of the chafing. And believe it or not, he's not the idiot of the day today. We have another later on. We go to Beaverton, Oregon. A 96-year-old photographer in Oregon has decided to plan and hold his own wake prior to his death, so he could attend the event. Well, no matter how you slice it, he will be attending the event. I guess the important thing to point out is he wants to be upright while attending the event. In any case, Hugh Aykroyd, who was 96, as I've mentioned, said that he held his wake for family and friends a couple of weeks ago at the Beaverton home of a friend by the name of Etta Sertegar. The Oregonian newspaper reported this story. He went on to say, "Well, why not? Why bother when I'm dead?" Aykroyd, a father of two whose wife died about 12 years ago, sat in his padded wheelchair and greeted his friends as they arrived for the event. He said one of his favorite items at the wake was a wreath bearing a ribbon reading, "Eventually, Hugh, rest in peace." "It's quite magnificent," Aykroyd said of his own wake. And we go back to July for a story. Actually, this is a headline story called Smooth Reactions. You know, some people, when confronted or dealing with situations, don't necessarily handle themselves quite well. So I have a couple of examples of what we like to call smooth reactions. Again, as I mentioned, this one back in July, Charles Diaz was charged with attempted murder for his angry reaction to a bicyclist who was carrying his 3-year-old son on the bike unsafely on a busy Asheville, North Carolina street. Now, according to police, Chuck, or Charles, was so anguished that he pulled out a gun and fired at the cyclist, grazing the man's helmet. Now, let me see if I got this straight. He wants to protect a child who is on this bicycle, and he figures the best way to make a point of this is to shoot the dad in the head. Yeah, smooth reaction there, Chuck. Smooth reaction. And in October, just as Pennsylvania federal judge Lawrence Stengel was launching into his explanation for the sentencing that he was about to impose on a bank robber by the name of Tramell Bledsoe, Tramell grew impatient. And he said, "Can you hurry this up? I don't have time for this. Just sentence me." "Oh, you'll have all the time in the world," responded Stengel, who gave Bledsoe 41 years. Wow. This is a person with some anger management issues, and he certainly has time to work on those. Anyway, let's get to our first guest on the Stuff File program, shall we? Joining us on the show right now is Ray McKinnon, who is a very busy man. He's an actor, a producer, and a director, and he's currently in a couple of films that you can check out. One of them is the big surprise hit of the season, the Sandra Bullock film, The Blind Side, where he plays Coach Cotton. Hi, Ray. How are you?
Hello. Good, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. I was telling you just before we went to air that I recently saw the movie The Blind Side, and it is such a sweet movie. The fact that it's a true story doesn't hurt, but it really is such a sweet movie filled with heart.
Absolutely. You know, and it's a lot of times films like those get poo-pooed by the tastemakers, but since this is based on a real story, it makes it a little more difficult. And, you know, life is sometimes sentimental and sweet, and occasionally movies can reflect that. And so I think there was a real hunger for that. We're all surprised at how well it's done. Good gracious. Wish I'd have had points.
As someone who, as I said earlier, acts and directs and produces, you know the whole creative process that goes into putting a film together. What was it like for you playing someone who is actually a real person?
Well, I guess, you know, just getting a call, John Lee Hancock, who wrote and directed the film, adapted it from a book, from the true story book, he's a rare bird. He's an admirer of my films, and he said that he wanted us to work together, so he called me and offered me the role of the coach, and I started reading the script, and this coach role was so good that I was sure there was another coach he was talking about. So I kept looking for the other coach. It's like, no, it's that coach. And it was just a great character. And, you know, he told me that partly he was writing, you know, he wasn't writing exactly like this coach was. He wanted to, you know, stay away from that. And so he created this character based loosely on the real coach. And I just really interpreted you know, his writing of that character. But I guess the research that I did, a friend of mine is an actual high school football coach, and I hung out with him and watched him, you know, deal with the kids every day. And it was so anytime I look really goofy or stupid, it's all because of my friend, the real coach.
Now, you have a recognizable face. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with your work if they see you, that you've done such characters as Reverend H.W. Smith in the television series Deadwood. You've done a lot of episodic television. But you're probably, as a character actor, certainly not a household name. Do you get that any weird reactions from people when they meet you, when they, first of all, don't realize that you're an actor that they may have seen on television or in the movies, but they think you're somebody they know?
Yeah, usually they think I'm their plumber, and they start telling me the problems with their running commode, and I'm like, yeah, it's that happens a lot, and that's it's kind of nice to be somewhat anonymous, and I like that. I like I do the same thing when I see somebody who's an actor that your subconscious is kind of funny because there's this imprint on your brain, like, I know I've seen that guy, I must know him. And then you realize, oh, wait a minute, he's an actor. So, yeah, that happens. That happens fairly often.
And even so, I didn't introduce you the correct way because I believe the correct way to introduce you is Academy Award-winning Ray McKinnon because you have an Oscar.
I guess Academy Award winning former DUI gathering. there's a lot of ways, a lot of things you could add, but yeah, we'll leave some of them out. Yeah, that did happen. You know, my wife Lisa Blunt and our producing partner Walton Goggins and I made a short film a few years ago called The Accountant, and really it was just I wanted to make a film. And I figured we could handle a short film, and just, you know, it went all the way to the award. So that was a rather surreal experience. So yeah, that did happen. You know, unfortunately, the Oscar itself's in a pawn shop right now, but they say they'll hold it for me.
The Oscar's in a pawn shop.
Well, you know, it's hard time. No, I'm kidding. No.
Well, where do you keep the Oscar?
I can't tell you that, you know. there's people around. I don't know where it is. Somewhere, I think I hit it because I was leaving town for a while, and it's one of two places, but I'm not sure where.
Okay.
To be honest.
We'll just keep that a secret then.
It's not under the mattress. I can assure you of that.
It's not under...
Somewhere more creative, so creative that I can't exactly say where.
Okay. The Oscar, when you got it, and again, I emphasize the fact that you're a writer, a producer, an actor. When you got the Oscar, and that was in 2002 for Best Live Action Short Film, The Accountant, did that open doors? Did it draw attention to you and your work that you didn't have before?
A little bit. You know, I think, you know, we ended up making our first feature about a year and a half later, and which was, you know, one of the reasons to do the short film was to have a calling card so we could, you know, show potential studios and financiers that, you know, that we, and when I say we, I don't mean just me, I mean me and my wife and Walton could, you know, make a film. So our intention for making the film was as a calling card and wasn't to win an Oscar. So certainly that didn't hurt, but I think also the film itself is, you know, it's not a bad movie, and I think it, you know, showed that we could handle ourselves around the set, and in some ways the film itself was as important as the award that followed.
So flash forward to the current time, and as I mentioned, the film The Blind Side, you play the role of Coach Cotton. As sentimental as this film is, are you surprised at the reaction that and the legs that this film has had? It just keeps going at the box office, and so much positive buzz. Are you surprised by that?
I'm surprised to the degree that it's, you know, as everybody else is who's in the business. I think I'm not surprised that I live in Arkansas and so, you know, I'm around people that this appeals to, and I know that for them, occasionally they like to go see movies that reflect them in a positive light. Who wouldn't? And so I think that's a big, strong reason, and not just in the South, but all over the country. I think, you know, people, you know, have a need to experience stories in a way that actually they walk out and feel good about themselves. So I think we just all underestimated that need, and that when you look at films, you know, the films that are being made and films that are in the multiplexes. I mean, I'm an art film guy primarily. And, you know, that's what I'm drawn to, and that's the kind of movies I've made. But when you look at the cineplexes, it's, you know, it seems like the movies are the vampire movies for the kids or the comedies for the kids. And occasionally there's a movie for this demographic, and they, by golly, they all showed up.
And as if your year wasn't big enough with that movie coming out, as I mentioned, you have That Evening Sun, a film that you produced and you're also in with Hal Holbrook, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, and that's what I've been doing in my life and day-to-day life is making these, you know, truly indie films. And I decided I wasn't going to make any more for a while. And then a young writer director, Scott Teams, came to me and Walton with this script, and I started reading, and I was like, it was so good. I was like, good Lord, I think I'm going to have to get involved. And 3 years later, we had a release in the fall, and Hal Holbrook is starring in it, and he's just absolutely wonderful. It's his first lead role in his career. He's 84 years old, and he's just fierce in it. It's a fierce performance, and I get to play his antagonist, and it's, you know, it's a great way to spend a life, I can assure you.
In talking about the roles that you've played and the scripts that you've seen, it sounds like you don't choose the work you portray. It sounds like it chooses you.
Well, I guess, you know, over the last few years, I haven't auditioned that much. I've been, you know, focusing on my writing and to contradict myself slightly about The Accountant, which was the short film, John Lee was a big fan of that movie, and, you know, he offered me the role, and Scott Teams with That Evening Sun is a fan of that movie and our, you know, our feature movies, and he wanted us to come on board because of that. And so, yeah, it's true. It's kind of all happened at once, and they're both great roles, completely, you know, totally different from each other. And it's, you know, I'm a little surprised at the attention at this point, but certainly grateful for it.
And we have just about a minute, but I understand there's more attention coming your way because you have a television pilot that you're working on?
Yes, I had this story in my head for a few years, and I just didn't think anybody would be kind of ready for this story in this kind of tone. And then I started watching Mad Men on AMC, and I literally wrote the pilot as a spec pilot, but with the idea of perhaps AMC coming, you know, on board, and they did. They bought it, and hopefully we'll make it next year. And then because of that pilot, I'm also adapting a book for HBO and Brad Pitt's company for a pilot as well. So, you know, it's great work while you can get it.
Well, you're a very, very busy man, and I especially thank you for coming on the program and taking some time to be with us and talk about the work that you're doing. Especially, like I say, I saw the movie The Blind Side, and it's just an amazing, amazing film, and it really sets a lovely tone. I thank you very much, Academy Award-winning Ray McKinnon, for being on the program with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Actor, producer, director, and Academy Award winner Ray McKinnon. And I can't emphasize this enough. If you haven't seen the film The Blind Side, run to the theater. It's a great little picture, and you don't have to be a football fan to like this movie. You only have to be a human being. Also, look for Ray's other film, the Hal Holbrook feature entitled That Evening Sun, which also reminds me, in addition to all of his accolades, forgot to mention this, Ray has also been nominated for a Spirit Award for the movie That Evening Sun. Congratulations on that, Ray. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Stick around, more Stuff File coming your way in just a matter of moments.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. From Montreal, Canada, and spanning the globe like a butterfly on speed, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on The Stuff File program, we'll meet the guy behind Gorillasuits.com. We'll also check the mailbag. We'll hear from Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. And we have an idiot of the day. Plus, of course, more stuff right here, right now. A couple of stories I want to share with you. We go to Stockholm for this first one. A Swedish family has asked for damages of nearly 30,000 euros after a Protestant pastor performed a funeral service, apparently drunk. The pastor also raised eyebrows when he kissed the hand of the deceased's daughter and gave an exaggerated hug to the 20-year-old granddaughter. Everything seemed to be going perfectly well until this pastor came in mumbling for 30 minutes, the family said, complaining that he also had what appeared to be alcohol on his breath. Nobody among his servers or in the audience understood what he was saying. The first thing we will now remember thinking about our loved one is the drunk pastor, they added. Apart from the 300,000 kroner, which is about 29,000 euros or $42,700 US, the family also is asked for a refund of the funeral expenses. The Church of Sweden, which ceased to be the state church in 2000, affirmed to Agence France-Presse that it had received a complaint saying that the issue is being investigated. Moving right along, we have what we can call, I guess, a safety advisory. You know, beverage can tops are still finding their way into the stomachs of some children, especially teens, despite being redesigned in the 1970s to keep people from swallowing them, according to U.S. researchers. I was unaware of the fact that this was some sort of growing issue or problem, children swallowing the tabs off the top of cans. A 16-year study at the Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, found 19 children had swallowed the safety tabs, which are designed to fold back but stay attached to cans for soda and other beverages. I'm just going out on a limb and saying these are some slow kids. I think we all know if you fiddle with these stay tabs, they can easily break them off, said Dr. Lane Donnelly, who led the study, telling reporters at the Radiological Society of North America's meeting, which took place in Chicago at the beginning of December. The study included children aged 1 to 18 at his medical center, but he suspects many cases go unreported. Donnelly said he suspected children break off the tab, drop it into the can, and inadvertently swallow the tab later on. When broken, the tab has jagged edges that could perforate the stomach or intestine. Since the tabs are made of aluminum, they are much harder to detect on an X-ray than coins, which babies and toddlers often swallow, Donnelly said. He said parents should be aware of the problem and that beverage companies might consider a newer design that makes the tabs harder to break off. As for the children in his study, none required surgery, although one was sent home with explicit instructions from the emergency department that read, "No sucking on can tops." Again, this is something we need to tell people about. There are people who are breaking off the tabs off the top of a can, dropping it inside the can, and then inadvertently drinking it. I don't know. Again, I'm reminded of the fact that we often tell stories on this program called the Darwin File. And you know, it is survival of the fittest. Some of the weaker ones in our species, well, they leave the planet because they're just not bright enough to stick around. Do we need to explain everything to everyone at all times? Don't swallow the tab on the can. Can I make it any more clear than that? Okay, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. You know, dressing up in a gorilla suit never gets old. Just ask Rob Knight, co-founder of GorillaSuits.com, a company that sells high-quality gorilla suits from your standard hairy ape to a gorilla ballerina getup. Rob is on the line with us right now from Minneapolis. Hi, Rob. How does someone actually get into the gorilla suit business?
Well, Peter, my brother dressed up as a gorilla several years ago for Halloween, and he's actually the other founder of the GorillaSuits.com website. And we just decided that it would be fun to have a site on the internet that was dedicated to just providing the best gorilla suits you can find.
Now this isn't your day job, is it?
It's just part-time right now for the two of us. We're, of course, definitely hoping it would grow, and I'd love to have it be my only job, but it's not quite there yet.
So when you're not selling gorilla suits, what do you do?
I do a little bit of freelance computer programming and web design.
Okay, so when you decided to start this business, I mean, how did you go about doing it? Did you check and see what kind of other gorilla suit companies are out there? Are there a lot of gorilla suit companies out there, or are you standing alone in a sea of very few?
Well, there are lots of other websites that sell costumes in general, but we didn't find anything that was dedicated to just the gorilla suits. If you go on YouTube, you can search for gorilla suits or gorilla costumes, and you can find lots of people doing anything from high school and college pranks to just showing off their costumes. And we thought there might be a market there, so we did some research and decided to start it up.
Okay, so in the intro, I mentioned high-quality gorilla suits. What exactly characterizes a high-quality gorilla suit?
Well, all of the suits that we sell are high-quality, and they're going to stand up to being worn for Halloween or whatever party or occasion you're looking at. The main things that's going to determine the high-quality suit would be that the fur is good, it has a nice feel to it, one of the other characteristics of a high-quality suit is just that the latex is of a sufficient thickness that it's not going to easily tear. And one of the most important things is having a good quality mask. And our suits, we have a couple of different ones, depending on if you want a more of a fun-looking mask or something that's simple. And we even have one that's our 2-bit Roar gorilla suit, and it comes with a movable mouth on its mask, which is a very unique feature.
How many different styles do you actually have?
It varies on what we have in stock, but usually are between 20 and 30 different gorilla costumes.
And what did you know about gorilla costumes before you started this business? In other words, I mean, you're now an expert on this. You've got 20 different styles out there. What did you learn about gorilla costumes that even surprised you?
Well, I did not think that there would be 20 or 30 different gorilla suits out there from various manufacturers. And I thought there was maybe like two, kind of one funny and one scary. But there's a very wide range of everything in between there.
So who have your customers been so far?
We've had a really wide variety of customers. I've had one or two TGI Fridays. I had a YMCA out towards the East Coast that bought a couple of different ones. Even had a police officer, and then had other people from the local Minneapolis area stop by to pick up a couple too.
Yeah, you had a police officer who used it to scare his coworkers?
Well, he used it to scare his coworkers before Halloween because he wanted to have a little bit of fun with it, and then I think he went out trick-or-treating with it afterwards.
What is the most popular gorilla suit out there?
It really depends on what you're looking for. The two most popular that we have is the one that's on our homepage, which is the Deluxe Adult Gorilla Suit, and that normally sells for $139.99 plus shipping. And then for people that like the scarier one, also on our homepage, in the lower right-hand corner, you can see the 2-bit Roar Gorilla Suit. And that one is the one with the movable mask, or the movable mouth on the mask, and a lot of people really like that feature.
So you started this business with your brother. What did your family and friends say when you and your brother said, you know, we're going to start a gorilla suit company?
They thought we were monkeying around. Okay, seriously. They thought it was kind of cool. They weren't sure if it was going to really have a market, but from our research on Google and YouTube, we thought that there was enough people out there looking for gorilla suits that there could be a market for a dedicated site, and it was a good first year, and we're looking forward to many more.
So do you sell the gorilla your dreams?
I think we do have one that is nicknamed that, but that's not the gorilla of my dreams by any means.
Do you ever wear a gorilla suit? On it? You say your brother did it. Did you mm-hmm. ever wear one?
Up until we started this, I had actually not been able to find a gorilla suit that fit me. I'm 6 feet, 6 inches, just a little under. And the only gorilla suit that we sell that actually fits me is the 2-bit Roar. Unfortunately, I have a 4-year-old and 2-year-old that would probably be a little scared if I showed up in that. So I have not worn one at this time, but plan to once they're a little older and understand it.
Yeah, there's something your kids can take to school for show and tell, huh? Bring dad in a gorilla suit?
Sure, I could go for that. That sounds okay. Like a lot of fun.
People can check out the website, which is www.gorillasuits.com. That's www.gorillasuits.com. And what, again, is the price range for a gorilla suit?
We have a couple that are down in the low 80s, and we go all the way up to about $260.
So the Cadillac of gorilla suits.
That one is definitely one of the bigger ones. It's called the Creature Reacher, and it's got really big arm and hand extensions, so it really can give you a good knuckle-dragging experience.
Well, I thank you very much for being on the program with us, Rob, and continued success literally with your monkey business.
All right. Thanks for the call, Peter.
Rob Knight, co-founder of GorillaSuits.com. You can find the link by going to my website, thestufffile.com. Just click on the What's On page for the corresponding show number, and that in this case would be 0019, and you'll find all the information. Again, my website is thestufffile.com. You're listening to The Stuff File program online in many locations, including cyberstationusa.com and World FM 88.5, New Zealand. Time to check the mailbag.
Incoming subspace signal.
And in the mailbag, just a couple of items I want to get to right now, starting with a message from Francois, which came in via Facebook. Francois writes, thank you for the podcast. They were my companion on my work-related road trip in northern Quebec. I've been listening to the reruns over and over since I had no internet connection. But here in Kujawak, there is an igloo with an unprotected Wi-Fi link, so I freshened up my library. I'm ready for the next couple of long hours. Okay, Francois, you really don't need to perpetuate the idea that everything up north here in Canada is an igloo. We have listeners around the world. They don't know you're joking. Anyway, as he goes on to say, and to show you how far away I am, at the co-op store, there is a lot of canned food, frozen food, but no spam. Maybe this is heaven. Okay, for those of you who aren't aware, I'm a fan of spam in a can, and I make no apologies for it. And every once in a while, some of the listeners try to remind me that there are some places on this planet where you can't find spam. Apparently, Kujawak is one of them. But there are more places than not where you can find spam. And that's the important thing. Anyway, he goes on to say, Francois does, congratulations on the show on FM in New Zealand. I'm a fan, but not quite enough to want to move over there to hear you on the airwaves. I'll keep up with the podcast up here in Kujawak. Thanks a lot. Keep it up. There you go. Signed, Francois, a frozen fan. Another item came in via my blog from a lady named Jill. She just listened to show number 0003. You got some catching up there to do, Jill. She's actually in the UK, and she really enjoyed it. She wanted to say, I really love the flea circus part with Walt Noon. Really fun and informative. Yeah, you don't get many shows where you hear what it's like to run an actual flea circus. We spoke to Walt Noon back on one of the earlier shows, and we do try to find interesting guests, like people who have flea circuses or people who, you know, sell gorilla suits. Various emails, Facebook messages, and tweets came in, expressing interest in the Meshach and Malik Christmas special that was aired on our show this past program. I'm glad that many of you liked it. For those of you who may have missed it, it is show number 0019, and of course it's still available as a download both on my site and it's archived at cyberstationusa.com, so you can check it out there. Once again, let me welcome the listeners that are joining us via World FM. That's 88.5 FM, which broadcasts in Tawa, Redwood, and Wellington, New Zealand. And they have a web stream at www.worldfm.co.nz. Don't forget, you can listen to past shows, as I've just mentioned, as they are all archived on my website at thestufffile.com. And remember, this is show number 0019, which means there are 18 previous shows that you have missed, and they're all waiting for you there. They are fascinating stuff. Just fascinating, if I don't say so myself. So check it out at thestufffile.com. You can also subscribe to the shows at iTunes. Plus, for Facebook users, remember to join the Stuff File group. And again, welcome to all you fine Kiwis now listening to us via World FM. And folks, no matter where you're listening to us from, since the audience seems to be growing, drop me a line and let me know where you are hearing us and how, be it online or over the air. I'd love to hear from you. The email address is peter@thestufffile.com. That's peter@thestufffile.com. And if you have items for the mailbag, you can address them to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And that's the mailbag. This is the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holden.
Got something for the mailbag? Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh. ¶¶
How you doing, Steve Areno?
Why, do you want me to go, ho, ho, ho? I'm not. It's over. It's over. Christmas is done. Past. History. Toast. Let's move on.
You know, we often talk about Ebenezer Scrooge leading up to Christmas in the Dickens classic, but we never talk about Ebenezer Scrooge after Christmas, I guess until now.
Yes, you're talking to him.
Yeah, little Bob.
No, I really, it was wonderful. I had a wonderful time.
Right.
It was great.
But now it's over, is what you're saying?
When you got to move on.
Uh-huh.
You understand that?
But I get the feeling,
move
though.
Move on.
Yeah,
move on.
I get the feeling that even though you say you want to move on, I get the feeling there's some lingering thoughts about the Christmas season that you'll want to get off your chest later.
Oh,
I don't know.
I do.
It's just
I
a sixth
and I will,
sense.
I will have those coming up a little later on in this segment. And just to give you a hint, this will not be something I'll have to mail in to anybody.
Okay.
Okay?
I understand.
Bah, humbug.
Well, sir, on that note, on that
yes.
cheery note, what do you have for us this week?
Well, let's see what we have here. Dateline, Kansas City, Missouri.
That would be the Show Me State.
It's where I live.
Yes, I know.
Kansas City police are looking for the man who broke into a 70-year-old woman's house and tried to rob her. The victim said she heard her rear sliding glass door break. Not that she has a sliding glass door on her rear, but you know what I mean. It was around 2:20 in the afternoon, and then a man crashed through the wooden doors into her kitchen and pointed a gun at her. He yelled for her to get onto the ground, but in a quick-thinking, strategical move, the woman took a cue from Fred Sanford of Sanford and Son. Remember that show?
Dun 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 it.
She grabbed her chest and she began feigning a heart attack. Remember? Elizabeth, I'm coming to see you, honey. Remember?
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, this freaked the would-be robber out, so he ran out the door without stealing anything. By the way, the woman was okay. She didn't require any medical attention. You know why?
Why?
Because she was faking it. She wasn't having a heart attack. It was just a smart move on her part.
Good for her.
I like that. That's smart.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a 70-year-old woman who's thinking, oh, my goodness, I love it. I think everybody should think that well.
And, you know, he'll spend all that
70, 60, 50, 40, whatever.
And he'll spend all that time in jail thinking about how he was outsmarted by a 70-year-old woman.
I know. A septuagenarian of all things.
Exactly.
Gosh, let us move on.
Let's.
Dateline, Jersey County, Illinois.
That would be the land of Lincoln.
Sure is. You know, sometimes you're so angry, so angry, that just ramming your truck into your ex's house doesn't make enough of a statement? Okay, I don't have a truck. But that's beside the point. So next time you find yourself in that situation, remember what one woman in Jersey County, Illinois did just before ramming her truck into her ex's house. This is a woman with a truck. She lit the truck on fire. Fortunately, nobody in the house was injured, but not surprisingly, the house itself was damaged quite extensively. Jersey County Sheriff Mike Kalal said the woman and the homeowner had a relationship that was on the outs. You think? Anyway, the burning truck first set the front porch on fire, then the flame spread to a couch that was near a front window, and then to the rest of the house. Amazingly, a relative of the homeowner rescued the woman from the burning truck. She was treated at a hospital, and the good thing is the refrigerator on the front porch didn't burn at all. Get the beer warm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or cool.
Or cool.
Whichever.
Yeah, yeah.
Dateline, Brimfield, Ohio.
Oh, no, Ohio. I can hardly wait to say goodbye.
Oh, there's that song. It's the Buckeye State.
I used to live there, you know.
I remember. You didn't like it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when police in Brimfield stopped Jamie Aguirre, who's 42 years of age, for a traffic violation back in October, they found some conventional photos of nude and near-nude women, but were especially surprised at a stash of x-rays and mammograms, which they supposed came from Aguirre's job as a technician at an imaging center in Tiffin, Ohio.
Ew.
The Brimfield police chief said he believed the stash was used by Aguirre for sexual gratification, and since some of the x-rays and mammograms were of girls under the age of 18, Aguirre was charged with possession of child pornography.
I want to know the real you, the person inside you. Yikes, that's
right.
Creepy.
You know what they say, inside every big pervert is a little pervert just wanting to get out.
That's creepy.
That is, I know. It's frightening. I don't even know why I thought of that. Gosh, let's move on.
Let's.
Dateline, still somewhere in Ohio.
Oh, no, Ohio. I can hardly wait to say goodbye.
Still the Buckeye State.
Yeah, we're going to keep this one somewhere because it covers several areas. James Ng, who's 27-year-old, was really all out to propose to his girlfriend, Sonia Bostic.
Right.
That's an interesting name, Bostic. Anyway, he had arranged for a hot air balloon ride in which he planned to drop to one knee and pop the question. Everything was going as planned until he dropped the ring, which had been hidden in his camera case, 500 feet above a wooded area in Ohio. James said his first thought was, you know, better not tell her, better buy another ring. But it took him forever to afford the one that he had. So he confessed the mistake, and he dropped to one knee anyway, and he proposed using a plastic tie twist. Sonia said yes. But unable to accept that the ring was gone for good, James started mapping the coordinates of the balloon's journey from the sky. For the following week, as his fiancée proudly wore a $10 Walmart ring on her engagement finger, while James and a friend cut through the forest with machetes searching for the camera bag. After 7 grueling days of searching the 3-mile square area, they found the camera bag, and the only thing still inside was the ring. And they lived happily ever after. Aww.
Isn't that sweet?
I'm so happy I could puke. Dateline, Clive, Iowa.
Oh, that'd be the Hawkeye State.
Yes, not the Buckeye State, the Hawkeye State.
But you're in such a great mood. I can't wait for your rant. Wow.
I know. I'm in a good mood.
Yeah.
77-year-old Audrey McKnight is suing Holmes Hyundai. Why? Well, she is claiming that a saleswoman pressured her into buying a new car while she was waiting for an oil change. McKnight claims she was adamant she couldn't afford a new car, but finally gave up after being pressured for hours. Dealership owner Max Holmes disputes those claims and says his lawyers will respond. McKnight made her claim under a new state consumer fraud law that makes such suits easier to file. Okay, so the salesman tries to convince you to buy something. You say yes, and it's the salesman's fault that you couldn't say no.
Hmm. Well, here's the thing I don't understand in this story.
What's that?
You said that she was being pressured for hours?
Yeah. Why it take so long to get an oil change?
That's what I'm thinking. How long is an oil change at this place?
I don't know. I wouldn't take it there. I'd go to Jiffy Lube.
There you go.
Or some other place that's not buying advertising on this show. Maybe we can convince them to do so.
Okay.
Let's do it. Oh, but I tell you, if that happened to me,
yes.
Peter, I'd be angry.
Well, I've sensed your anger all through this segment today.
But my anger has come out, hasn't it?
It seems to be a post-Christmas anger. I don't know what it's based on. Like, what's wrong, Steve?
I'll tell you what it is.
Yes.
It's in the cards. I'm serious. Really, literally. It is time for my two-minute tirade. And, you know, when I get angry, I take this keyboard in hand that I have in front of me, and I write on it. And this is what I want to talk about. I want to talk about Christmas cards, Peter. No, not the Christmas cards people sign and mail off to friends and family that they rarely see, and perhaps hope never to see again. I'm talking about the family newsletters. I realize Christmas is over, but gosh, I'm still angry. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? The impersonal newsletter that informs all recipients that little Edgar is now a junior in college and considering a major. It also informs all recipients that little Annie is not so little anymore and will soon be bringing a wonderful blessing into the family. This is called opening up to friends and family. Perhaps if not so little anymore Annie had decided not to open up to some guy, she wouldn't be expecting a blessed event early in the new year. But I digress. It's bad enough that we're getting this TMI stuff, but then we learn that Mom took some time off in July to regain her sanity. That's code for Mom going to a fat farm outside of Phoenix to drop 40 pounds and to entice Dad back into the sack. As for Dad, he returned from a refreshing hunting trip in the mountains. That's code for Dad getting it on with a foxy next-door neighbor and heading off to Denver with her for a couple of weeks. Oh, by the way, Edgar is feeling a lot better after a lengthy bout with the flu in September. That's code for Big Ed caught a dose of the clap from that little tramp down the street. Here's a suggestion. Just send a Christmas card signed by everyone in the family and say, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. I could really do without the rest. One more thing. Bah, humbug.
Wow, I'm trying to picture the friends you hang out with. Do your friends send these newsletters from Wisteria Lane? What's going on?
Oh, they sure do.
Wow. Sir, under those circumstances, all I can ask is please say those three distinctive words.
Happy New Year! Make that make that something else, shall we?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, here we go. I'm going to say it right now. I'm going to say it right now.
Yep.
Hit the theme!
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We have a couple of stories to share with you before we get to the end of the program and, of course, the idiot of the day in just a matter of moments. But a couple of stories, both coming from the UK, dealing with surveys, and it's amazing the things they ask and, more importantly, what people know when it comes to answering surveys and doing these kinds of tests. So here you go. Newborn babies may smell sweet, but guys are more drawn to the scent of bacon frying. According to a recent poll, British men prefer the smell of bacon frying, freshly baked bread, clean sheets, and freshly mowed grass to that of a newborn. They also enjoy sniffing fish and chips, fresh coffee, and the air after it rains. Women say bread, grass, clean sheets, fresh flowers, and vanilla are their favorite scents. Vomit, BO, wet dogs, smelly feet, and public bathrooms are the worst smells. Aromas affect one's mood, as 92% of women say a nice scent has the ability to change their mood and make them happy. Many claim they're fond of pleasant smells that remind them of childhood memories or someone they love. In fact, catching a whiff of a partner's aftershave on a passerby raises a smile in 80% of Brits. And while we're on the topic of Brits, let's get to the second story. One in 20 British school children thinks Adolf Hitler was a German football manager, according to a survey. One in six youngsters believed Auschwitz was a theme park, and one in 12 thought the Blitz was a European cleanup operation following World War II. The embarrassing findings are contained in a poll for the veterans charity Erskine, which asked 2,000 kids aged 9 to 11 about the two world wars. One in four said they did not think about soldiers who died then, and 40% had no idea when Remembrance Day is. Erskine Chief Executive Major Jim Panton said, "Some answers to this poll have shocked us and show us that we have a part to play, not just in caring for veterans, but in educating society. Children are the future of the country. It is important we help them learn about our history." The Erskine Charity, which provides nursing and medical care for veterans, will now take part in a national scheme to educate children about the world wars. Okay, time to get to the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
And this one is a doozy. In South Dakota, former state representative Ted Alvin Clout was convicted of raping his two foster daughters and sentenced to 44 years in prison for that, and 10 more years after pleading guilty to two counts of witness tampering. But he was getting kind of tired of all the negative publicity, so he has sent area and national news organizations what he claims is a copyright notice that seeks to prevent the use of his name without his consent. A letter and an accompanying document labeled Common Law Copyright Notice said Clout is reserving a common law copyright of a trade name or trademark for his name. Thus, no one can use his name without his consent, and anyone who does would owe him $500,000. I guess I'm already up to $1 million so far. The notice, received by the Associated Press and several other news organizations, had a return address that matched that of the state prison where Clout was being held. Now I'm up to $1.5 million. But Laura Malone, Associate General Counsel for Intellectual Property at the Associated Press, said names of people, companies, and products cannot be protected under copyright law. And ironically, his stupid stunt has just created more press for him, which is seemingly what he was attempting to avoid. So, Ted Alvin Clout, okay, we're up to $2 million now. You are an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Hope you've enjoyed it. Number 0019. If you want to find that information on the show, just go to the website. That's thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on our guests on the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding date and program number, and again, that number is 0019 for this particular edition of The Stuff File. You can email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder and Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. We hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. You could also find us on iTunes. We're coming to you from everywhere, including cyberstationusa.com. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Guests of the Stuff File program stay at their own homes. Trust me, I'm the voice for this program. I know there's no budget for accommodations. I'm reading this on a futon.